back. And one of the things that really complicated things going through the 90s is some leadership were very adept at driving wedges between family members, between husbands and wives, between parents and children. Mm-hmm. And that was something I saw going on. They would take whoever they thought, let's say in a marriage, they would take whatever spouse they thought was the more solidly in the way camp, and they would draw them into their confidence and build them up and undermine the other one. And then, you know, in my marriage, sometimes it flipped back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one week I was the devil incarnate, you know, the next week my wife was, you know, the whore of Babylon, you know. Mm-hmm. It was just, you never knew what they were going to do. And rather than trying to help keep us on the same track, it was the divide and conquer thing. One situation that, you know, you hear, you see on some of our threads on GreaseBot, you know, people jumping in, why are you still bitter after all these years?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's something that I'm still bitter about. I haven't seen the guy who is going to be the star of this next little story here.
Okay.
Because they put us on, and this is my first wife and I, they put us on probation in 1999. And probation is something where you're kind of kicked out, but you're kind of not. Where you've done something to make them mad, but they still think you can be salvaged. So the terms of probation are, and generally it would be for 6 months. Although sometimes it would be shorter, sometimes it would be longer.
Mm-hmm.
And the terms usually were, you have no contact with anyone who is active in fellowship. You don't call them, you don't email them. If you accidentally run into them in the street, you go the other way. And you have to once a month write a letter to whoever you're designated to write to. In our case, it was the LIM coordinator. And explain to them what you're doing to get yourself out of this spiritual hole that you're in. Well, at the time, they put my wife and I on probation. Well, we had two children who were young adults at the time. Both of them were college age. We have six children altogether.
Okay.
But the two college age ones were considered to be adults and to make their own decisions. They were allowed to go to fellowships. The four younger ones, who were in their teens to preteens at the time, were not allowed to go. So you've got some family members who are being encouraged to attend fellowships and some who are told they can't. What was complicating matters with the two older boys was sometime in the 90s, the way, mainly pushed by Craig and Donna Martindale, they pushed that your college-age children still need to be overseen, quote-unquote, watched over just like your younger children. They should be telling you what their schedule is. They should be running decisions by you. you know, for all practical purposes, you're treating them like little kids. Well, they told us, well, your two oldest sons, you're still overseeing them. Well, our two older sons thought that was kind of confusing. So, well, Mom and Dad, they're messed up enough that they can't come to fellowship, and they're on this probation. But they can tell us what to do. So that caused a lot of resentment, especially with my oldest son. Well, as time went by, you know, there was a lot of resentment going on, and there was a lot of friction between us and especially our oldest son. And eventually we were allowed back into the good graces of the Way International and were going to fellowship again. But the damage had been kind of done with our oldest son. And there'd be situations where he would say or do something, and the leadership would get on us to, well, you got to oversee your son. And we would jump in there, and he would resist, pretty much like, you know, any young adult whose parents are trying to tell him what to do. And the fellowship coordinator, the TWIC coordinator, got involved. And after all was said and done, him and the limb coordinator, decreed that my son would no longer answer to me or deal with me as a father or a son to a father, but that he would be overseen directly by our TWIC coordinator.
Jeez Louise.
So, yeah. So he's basically saying, I'm going to be the father to your son. And so, you know, it's one of those deals. Now, the good news is my son and I have since reconciled. He left. He was actually the first member of our family to leave the way. We've reconciled. We get along fine. He's got, and he's got the same opinion of this leader that I do. But the fact that they would do something like this, that this was considered acceptable. It was like we were talking about earlier how not every Way Corps leader got into controlling people's lives and interfering, but it was considered appropriate to do so when they thought they should do so. And this guy pushed things so far as to try to take my son away from me. In addition to the driving the wedge between my first wife and I, they would, for a long time, she was considered more solidly in the white camp than I was. So, you know, they would talk to her, and just I was somebody that should be withdrawn, separate, marking a void, what have you. You know, then you know, she would start getting angry at some of the things they were doing. Then they'd work on me. So, you know, she's not doing under control. She's not doing the program. And, you know, if she doesn't do this, then, you know, there's going to be consequences. And you know, before long, there was really nothing to build on anymore. It had been so much undermined.
So they're just kind of working one against the other, in essence.
Well, sure. And I'm not gonna put all my problems on the way. We had problems. She and I both had problems. But here's a Christian ministry claiming to represent God. And, you know, you go back to the old green card, power from unliving, increases harmony in the home.
Mm-hmm.
Harmony in the home. You know, far from it. Far from it. Doing everything they could to drive wedges and to undermine relationships, you know. And to me, that was the hallmark of what went on in the 90s.
Yeah, I still can't believe some of that stuff. That I mean, I know it happened, but it mm-hmm. just is in that incredible area where you just go, how could people do this? And you know, you made a great statement where it was like there was enough good to offset the bad, but it was.
Well, I think part of it too was after the big split, the big exodus in what was it, 87 right. or 88, around there, and you know, and probably was different times in different areas. After that, I think once Martindale got over his shell shock. At seeing, you know, the ministry that was just pretty much handed to him on a silver platter, just all the pieces. I think, you know, right or wrong, I think he decided that he was just going to circle the wagons. That crap wasn't going to happen again. Whereas, I think his, you know, based on the Galatians tapes that he put out, I think he rationalized that. He allowed Chris Gere and some of these other men undermine him. Now, you know, you look at it from the outside, and it's, all right, Chris Gere and some of these other guys, Chris Gere and some of these other guys. Things were, the Board of Trustees was being called on things that they were doing that they shouldn't have been doing. But what Martindale started doing was rationalizing it. Okay, yeah, I'm not perfect, but You know, they were, you know, they were operating from the devil, and they were doing this and they were doing that. And I think one part of him just resolved that he would never let that happen again. The screws were tightened down. It became keep the household pure was one of the watchwords. You know, even just the household, something you didn't hear too much in the 70s or 80s. You know, a real difference between the quote-unquote household and the family of God. The household was the ones who were standing with the way. And it was a real circle of wagons mentality. You know, if you had somebody who was causing any kind of disagreement, who wasn't towing the party line in any way, I mean, there was plenty of people who were willing to turn you in. And then there was, they'll turn you into leadership, and there's plenty of leadership ready to call you on the carpet, interrogate you, and throw you out. And it became worse and worse because, the big thing got thrown out. You know, they decided homosexuality was big. Well, they got rid of all of them, and where eventually it got to be where, you don't really mow your lawn quite right.
The big lawnmower purge. Yes.
It just became Lynn coordinators. After people had recently left, but we'd gone from 8 to a big down to 5 or something like that, and we were running a rise and expansion class, and he jokingly said, "Yep, it's a great rise and reduction." And that was what was happening. Right. Every time you turned around, it was less people.
Right.
I've seen science fiction shows like that.
This would make a good.
It was a great Stargate episode.
Yes, this actually would make a great science fiction show. I think no one would believe that it all happened.
But it's one of those things where, if a lot of that stuff started happening right off the bat, people would have left quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But it came in piece by piece, to where you put up with more and more. And then with a lot of us, families, husbands, wives weren't always of the same opinion. You know, my first wife, she was a lot more committed to staying in than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And any rumblings that I had that we needed to leave was just evidence for her that there was something wrong with me. And there was other. there's other posters, like I was telling you earlier in this conversation, kind of a support circle of grease spotters that I would correspond with who, we just kept each other sane.
Yeah.
I can't believe the limb coordinator said this. Really? He said the same thing to me. Told me to read the same chapter out of the same book. But I think when it... It just kept getting worse and worse, and then finally, I was asked to leave, mainly because they figured out I was posting on GreaseBot.
How did they figure that out?
Well, I was pretty vocal about what I saw towards the end. What I saw were problems. I'd always kept my mouth shut, figuring the old saying, "Hold it in abeyance."
Right.
Well, just be meek and you'll understand it by and by or whatever. And but after the lawsuit in April 2001, I think,
mm-hmm.
the first lawsuit, after that was announced, I started thinking, here's this guy. He's supposed to be the man of God. He's the main teacher for this ministry. He's the leader, and yet he somehow thought it was okay to have sex with another man's wife. Is this the kind of guy I should be listening to? But I didn't just throw it all out, the whole baby with the bathwater mm-hmm. thing. I didn't do that at first. I said, all right, just because he's screwed up in this area, that doesn't necessarily mean that what he's teaching is wrong. So I started on a one-year program, and the way made it very easy for me, because they started doing a Sunday teaching service series where every Sunday they taught a different section or segment of Craig Martindale's The Way of Abundance and Power class. So I'd spend a week looking at the segment, comparing it to what had been taught before in the way, comparing it to the Bible, and started amassing a list of problems that I saw with it. And it eventually became 10 pages, 10 type pages of problems that I saw with the class. I went to my fellowship coordinator. He didn't know what to do. They told me that they were going to pass it up to our branch coordinator, who was in Kansas City, but he got kicked out and marked and avoided, so it got kind of stymied. So I wrote a letter to John Reynolds, who was the secretary treasurer at the time. And he suggested that the best thing I can do is talk to, can I mention a name here, or should I keep him anonymous?
We can always.
Region coordinator.
Okay.
I'll just say the region coordinator. Okay. The region coordinator at the time was going to be teaching Martindale's class live. And Reynolds said, well, go talk to him. He's been working the word so that he can teach this class. He can probably help resolve all these problems that you have. And keep in mind, Reynolds has got the list. I'm just not telling him I've got problems. He's got a list, pages and pages, 10 pages long, of all these problems I've got that I've got documented from either the Bible or from things that were taught before. And anyway, I go to this region coordinator and tell him what my concerns are. And I said, John Reynolds said I should talk to you because you've been working the word on this, so you can teach this class. He kind of laughs. The trustees say this class is good enough. Well, that's just what I'm going to teach, exactly what's in the class.
Oh, my God.
So my problems that I had with specific way doctrine were a matter of record. I mean, it went from my toy coordinator to the region coordinator up to the board of trustees. You know, it was public knowledge what my problems were. Well, I was posting on Waydale and then later in Griefspot, and I was harping on a lot of these same things. One thing in particular was the original sin of mankind thing, which Craig Martindale claims is the devil having lesbian sex with Eve. And that was one of the things. But whoever was monitoring Griefspot, and I'm thinking it would have to have been this region coordinator, or at least somebody who knew me, was noticing similarities between what I was telling them in person and what a poster, I used to post under the name Twiral, was saying on Griefspot. And they tried to get me to admit that it was me, and I never did, but I'm sure they didn't believe me, because the next day they called me up and kicked me out. And the stated reason was that I was no longer welcome at any way functions because I did not believe that the trustees were leading the ministry in the right direction. Yeah, no kidding.
All right, tell me something I don't know.
But it was, it kind of lifted in one respect. It licked, it's like weight off my back. It's like, all right, they kicked me out. I don't have to pretend anymore.
Right.
Yeah, unfortunately, my wife at the time saw that as the last straw. Leave our house and asked me to leave our house a few weeks after that.
That quickly, really?
Yeah, it was pretty quick. And the way didn't cause the problems that my ex-wife and I had, but they sure made it worse.
Well, they would get, it seems to me there's a place where you get involved and a place where you don't get involved. And, I'm sure, somebody that's like a priest or a minister would only get involved in something if they were asked to get involved. They just don't, walk over to your house and go, okay, we're going to talk about your son today, you know. So just wouldn't happen in the real world.
Yeah. I don't remember it. My parents were very active. My parents were very active in their church, very active. I mean, they were, you know, did volunteer work, and, you know, there was a men's group called the Holy Name Society that the men were involved in, you know, did father and son nights, and, you know, all us boys were altar boys, and I can't remember ever the priest showing up and telling us what we were going to do in our house or how my parents should be raising our kids. You know, if that had ever happened, we'd probably be Episcopalians.
Oh, yeah. I remember there were, when I was growing up, there were some problems in my house. I remember talking to a priest, and I remember him being, he definitely wasn't avoiding the problem, but he definitely said, you know, that's something that, you know, you, your mother and your father have to work out, or your, you know, your parents with your brother or whatever, you know, and he would kind of end it with, you know, if they want to come and talk to me, that they're more than welcome to. I'd be happy to, you know,
and
intervene.
I think in most churches, most churches,
you know, they don't, you know, walk over. Well, we think you're doing this, so we're going to get involved.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So all of a sudden you're out of house and home, and you don't have a cult to follow along.
I don't have what?
A cult.
I didn't have a cult anymore.
Yeah.
I lost my cult. But it was different. I went and got myself a little apartment that I affectionately called the hovel, because it pretty much was.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, for a few months, I just kind of didn't know what to do. I didn't have any friends because they were all in the way, and didn't have much of a family. And you know, it was kind of tough. I remember the first, it was Christmas, I think. I'd gone to, went and drank a bunch of Jack Daniels and what's that stuff? Eggnog. Jack Daniels and eggnog. And yeah, it tastes pretty good. And went to midnight mass to listen to the choir. But, it was rough at first, but you know, little by little, I started realizing this. You know, I what they say about me, it's really irrelevant. I just need to make my own way. You know, I had good support from some people on Greasebot. You know, I remember getting a call Christmas Day from Abigail, my first Christmas by myself.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, there's people out there who care. You know, went on that next summer, went on a tour of the United States.
I remember and the Walmart.
And a couple hours in Canada.
Yeah.
And met quite a few grease spotters on that trip.
Yeah, you met more people than just about anyone, at least at one point.
I'm one of the tops, I think.
Yeah.
I think Wacky Funster was up there for a while.
Yeah, she would meet a lot of people when she was traveling too.
But I had got omelets made for me by the man of 1,000 screen names and Abigail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, visited Hill Brothers and Mandy, who doesn't really post anymore.
Right.
It just kind of took a big circle.
Yeah.
Stopped, saw my parents. Yeah, that's been fun too, getting out and meeting the people who you just see as names on a computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always, you know, interesting too. Where are you going on vacation? Well, I'm just kind of driving around the country.
Yeah.
And where are you going to be staying? Oh, with these people I met on the internet.
Yeah.
And then if I really got brave, they were in the same cult that I was.
Yeah, I have fun trying to explain where I'm going and stuff, you know, when I go to like the Weenie Roast, you know.
And, oh, yeah.
You know,
the Weenie Roast.
Heaven forbid you call it the Weenie Roast, because then you've got more explaining to do than necessary. But,
I actually had the last Weenie Roast that I went to, which was the third one. The smokehouse manager where I work from made a bunch of food for it.
Really?
He thought it was such a cool thing. He goes, yeah, I'm going to just give you all this stuff.
Wow.
Cooked me up a bunch of Italian sausage and peppers and onions.
Now, was that the one that I was at, or is that the one year
That was after? The one after.
The one after, yeah.
That was the one the year after.
Mm-hmm.
So I always loved that first weenie roast when you first walked in. And I don't think anybody in the room had ever laid eyes on you before.
Right, right.
And Rascal, I think it was, asked you who you were, and you were saying Paw.
Right.
And we're all thinking you're saying Paul.
Yeah.
Paul. Paul who? What's your screen name? And then everyone's thinking, you know, the other Mike,
right, yeah.
PFL fan Mike. And you thought you were in the wrong room.
And my blood pressure was like rising drastically each second. You know, I was like, I felt like I was going, you know, I'm going to pass out here. I'll probably just fall on her. That'll answer her question, you know. So. Yeah, that was one of the funniest things. I constantly bring it up. In fact, now this is either the second or third podcast that has been brought up about it.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah, she's still embarrassed about it. She's
that was funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know what you looked like.
Right.
I mean, I had, you know, this has probably been brought up too, the whole Fabio thing.
Oh yeah.
Somebody told me that you look like Fabio.
I don't know where.
I don't know where that came. Did you used to have long hair, maybe?
I did have long hair at one point, but I don't think anybody from Grease Spots ever seen me with long hair.
Well, but that's somehow I got in my head that's what you look like.
Right.
And you know, no offense, but you don't look like Bobby.
I was going to say, nothing.
neither do I, for that matter. But. You know, another thing I wanted to bring up too is I'm part of the small minority of non-Christians, mm-hmm. at Grease Spot, and you know, so I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm not getting any abuse for it. You know, mainly because I don't beat anybody over the head about it.
Right.
But a lot of that came about kind of in the same process that got me looking at Martindale's class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I looked at it and broke it down, and I saw a lot of problems with it. And you know, why should I believe this guy just because he says? And then in that process, I started seeing problems with what Werwell taught.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, all right, well, why should I believe anything he says just because he says it? Process started little by little. It's like this started going back. It's like, well, you know, there's problems in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm seeing, you know, Carl Kaler brings up the example of some contradictory passages in the book of Judges. It was the big awakening for him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, they don't agree. You know, I don't think I had any big epiphany like that. Like, oh, my God, this doesn't agree with that. But it was more along the lines of, well, the only reason I can even assume that the Bible fits together like a hand in a glove because I have already assumed that the Bible fits together
right. Like
a hand in a glove. And it, I came to the conclusion for me that there was really no good reason why I should believe the Bible as opposed to the Bhagavad Gita or the Quran or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the decision in my life to just kind of start from zero, start from neutral. And if I saw things in the Bible or Christianity that made sense to me, well, then I would incorporate it into my life, into my belief system. If I saw things in other places, I was going to incorporate those into my belief system. But I saw no reason for me to believe anymore that the Bible was the Word of God. It may be,
mm-hmm.
I'm just not seeing it. And a lot of that attitude colors what I do on the forums, in the forums and in the threads, is I'll just ask questions. Well, why do you believe that? You know, where somebody is really on their soapbox about something. They may be right,
mm-hmm.
but I just want to know, well, why do you think you're right? It's not necessarily a disparaging. Well, it's not a disparaging.
Right.
It's not where I'm saying, oh, you're full of crap. You don't know what you're talking about. It's more along the lines of, oh, well, you know that this was God. How do you know? And
yeah,
and that's what's always kind of troubled me, because most of the answers are just are not real satisfying. And you know, it all may be true, and I just haven't seen it yet. Yeah. And I had times in the past where, you know, I've gotten jumped, quote unquote, in the threads for saying stuff like that. But I think I've been around long enough that people know where I'm coming from. That I get respect, you know, sometimes grudgingly, but I get respect for my opinion, you know, from people who have got strong Christian opinions and faith and belief. Conversations with them, I can have conversations with them. I can have a discussion. Heck, I'm in the doctrinal section quite a bit, you know. You know, I understand it. It makes sense. I want to understand it.
Well, it's, you know, it's something that I think is, it's a great, great part of Grease Spot, but it's also something that people look at as a downfall, is that they're, you've got this camp of agnostics, and they're just there waiting to talk you out of the Word of God or Word of whatever. And mm-hmm. they don't look at the greatness of a discussion where you get a chance to say why and how you've come to the conclusion that you believe such a thing. You know, it for me, I enjoy, I don't post all that often because I seem to get in more trouble than most when I do. But I read and I was like going, and I see these very logical points being made. And it's fascinating. I feel that the whole this whole experience on Earth, you should always be changing, you know, or developing and not sitting and just getting set in your ways. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. discussion is one of those methods that you can use, thinking and not just all of a sudden decide I'm a this and that's that. You know, I think the discussions are so valued, particularly, mm-hmm. and I think particularly for people that are just out, it really doesn't matter where they end up. It's the process.
Right.
It's the process of going through it and figuring out why you believe something.
And I think, a lot of people don't investigate, or they only investigate, or they only investigate to a certain point, and then stop. And you know, right. there was a poster. There was a poster, yeah. I was reading a thread earlier today, and the posting of he suggested that somebody go look something up. And I said, well, I've already come to the point where I know what the truth is on this. What the truth is. Like, well, okay, but okay. I don't know that you can ever get to that point. I think you can get to points where. Certain pieces of knowledge will make sense now. I don't think you can ever stop and say, that's all it is. My understanding has reached this peak. I can't understand any more about this. I think that was one of the harmful things in the way, is we would interpret a piece of the scripture a certain way, and that would be it. We wouldn't want to change it. And then we would try to interpret everything else to fit into that box. Well, like the Trinity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, on balance, you know, you're not going to find a Trinity in the Bible. However, there's people at Greasepot who can put forth a pretty good case for the Trinity based on the Bible.
Yes.
And there are ambiguous, let's call them, scriptures that are interpreted both ways, where the Trinitarians look and say, well, that means that there is three gods, or three-part gods, excuse me. And the Unitarians say, well, no, that means this.
Right.
And a lot of it comes from, well, what's your preconceived notion? You've already decided at a certain point in your life, well, this means this, and then everything else has got to fit. And, you know, Wirbel got to the point where, even though out of one side of his mouth he was telling us, it's the word, nothing but the word, the other side of his mouth, he was saying things like, well, we don't have a scripture to back this up, but it's got to be.
Yeah. And yeah, he definitely did that.
And, but you know, I think that it's not so much what's written. I mean, I'm not advocating that Christians throw out the Bible, but what I've seen over the last few years at GreaseBot is the real faith that anybody has, no matter what it is, whether you're a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool werewolfite, or you're a Catholic, or a Presbyterian, or a pagan, whatever it is, your faith is based on your experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can read a book, and you can read the Bible and decide and make a decision that you're going to believe that the Bible is the Word of God and that everything in it is true. But it's pretty barren if you never have any experience to back that up.
Right.
And that's what I've seen over the years is when I've questioned people, okay, well, this says this, this says this. Well, why do you believe it? Well, because I prayed and I got this answer. Or because I felt this presence of God. Or I know that Jesus loves me. It's all experience. And I think in the way we were taught that experience is bad,
mm-hmm.
I no longer believe that.
Right.
I think experience is a good thing. And, you know, and that's kind of one of the things that I have learned in, you know, studying Wicca and studying pagan religions and things like that. A lot of modern paganism is there. What you experience is your truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true for, to a great extent, for Christianity as well. And, you know, my experience isn't valid for you, but it is for me.
Right.
And your experience is you can't force your experience on me, but you sure is valid for you. But it's still fun.
Yes.
To try to talk to people who are never going to change their minds.
I was mentioning in the when all the guys were talking last week or the week before, my dad argued most of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And at his wake, there were all these politicians, local, city, and even state, came to the wake. And they would, when they were shaking my hands, they would tell, you know, he goes, you know, he really helped me solidify certain things. He helped me make my policy. And I was going, how? He goes, because he argued with me. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm thinking, and it didn't really hit me until this past year when I'm thinking about things more, that he made people think. You know, that it wasn't just arguing for argument's sake. It was that mm-hmm. he was put, you know, if this person said, I believe in A, he would go in and goes, why the heck do you believe in A when B's there? You know,
yep.
just putting it out there. You may end up believing A, and that's fine and dandy. But at least you've gotten exposed to what else is out there. You know,
that's right.
Yeah. And yeah, there are, you know, that's what I've always envisioned these discussion forums to be, that they could be eye-opening and not, and I think sometimes people get just too defensive, you know,
mm-hmm.
just, it's not, you know, we're not going to, none of us are going to drive over and visit your house and, you know, take over. We're, you know, it's just a discussion, you know, and,
yeah.
And sometimes if you get, sometimes when you get, you know, too heated, it might be a good idea to take a break and, you know, go take a
yep.
walk or something. But,
well, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, a lot of time, I can't remember who said this to me one time, but another poster said that so often they're not discussions, they're just, you know, people giving monologues on why they believe what they believe, the other person completely ignoring what the other person is saying.
Right, right.
But, you know, on the other hand, we've got, from all sides of the spectrum, we've got some good minds at GreaseBot.
Oh, very good, yes.
We have got some sharp people. I mean, there's, you know, I consider myself a pretty intelligent guy, but there's some people at GreaseBot that I wouldn't want to take on.
Right. Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah, it's like the, what was that Albert Brooks movie where the going to heaven thing where, you know, most people only use 5% of their brain, and there are some people in Greece, but that use like 10%. They just,
And those are the people I like to, whether they're the same, my opinion is the same as mine or different than mine, those are the people I like to interact with, because I can learn things from them. Even if it's different than what I'm saying or where I'm going, I'm going to learn something. I'm going to learn a little bit more about their point of view.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely...
And maybe be myself thereby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think you can... I don't think hearing somebody's experience or story can ever be detrimental to you. You walk away a better person. Even if it means that you don't want to do what that person's doing. You know, it's whatever your thing is, you've walked away and you've fast another facet of this grand thing called life.
It's a wonderful
thing. Yes, it is. It definitely is. Anything you'd like to add?
Oh, well, probably after I hang up, I'll think of something.
Yeah, some of these become two or three phone calls, so if you do, just say so, and we'll do some more.
Okay, but I think that's all I can think of. You know, gave you my life story. And, you know, I haven't said what my name is, but I have no problem giving out my name. My name is Tom Joyce, from Rosedale, New York, living in Nebraska, exile in Nebraska, last 26 years.
I don't know if I ever told you this, my one of my dad's good friends was named Tom Joyce. And
really?
It was Tom and he had a brother, it was either Peter Joyce or Paul Joyce. And they had an Irish radio show every weekend. And my father played bagpipes once in a while. He used to go on the show once in a while. And then he didn't go on the show, he'd always be talking to him or listening to the show. And
Well, back east, it's a common name.
Yes.
There's probably, in Nebraska, there's probably less than a dozen Joyce families. Mm-hmm. Some of them, I know some of them.
Right.
There's several Joyces that I know out here, but when I grew up in New York, they were all over the place.
Right.
It was very common name. And, you know, Boston and, you know, all up in New England, it's you know, they're thick on the ground. You can't swing a dead cat without hitting a Joyce.
That's good.
I don't think I've ever heard that one. There's a guy out in Seattle who is a sculptor, works with iron, and his name is Tom Joyce. And where the heck was it? We were at, Susie and I were somewhere. Oh, she was doing tarot readings for the state legislators.
Really?
One year.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the Nebraska Broadcasters Association. They brought her as entertainment, and she did a lot of readings for state senators and such. But at any rate, one of these senators was introduced to me, and she said, "Oh, I love your work." And I'm thinking, what, selling groceries? What are you talking? You like that display of canned goods that I built the other day? And then it dawned on me, she was this other Tom Joyce.
Okay.
And she was referring to this sculptor out on the West Coast, saying, "No, that's not me. I'm a different Tom Joyce. I'm the poor Tom Joyce."
Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
I've been. In fact, you're the. Actually, you. We talked, and most guys are very resistant to do this. I won't name names, but there's been a number of men that have been very hesitant about doing it. So, but hopefully that'll change once they hear more of them. So.
Oh yeah, we're breaking the. Am I in the group now? Am I the first guy?
Not including me.
Yeah. Oh, you.
Yeah,
you.
But you are the first guy to be interviewed.
Episode 7.
Oh.
The Pope episode.